Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Instant Reaction Podcast, HawkeyeNation.com. Andrew Downs here with you after an embarrassing showing in the Citrus Bowl for the Iowa Hawkeyes. 35-0, Tennessee with the win over Iowa. Not a ton to say about this, so this podcast probably won't be too long. I guess we start with the positive, and that's ding dong, the Brian Ferentz era is dead. Brian Ferentz will no longer be the offensive coordinator. Obviously, the big question will be how much the offense will actually change with a new offensive coordinator. Expecting an announcement to come on a hiring in that position in the next several weeks, and we'll have time to cover that as we move forward. And it'll be interesting to hear what Kirk Ferentz says after this game, what he is asked by reporters. I don't expect to learn a lot. 8 years ago, Tennessee blew out Iowa in a bowl game. And it really felt like maybe the end of the Kirk Ferentz era, like something had to drastically change. And it resulted in 8 pretty dang good years of football after that, including a 12-0 regular season the very next year. And so turnarounds have happened before. And, you know, we'll see if this loss to Tennessee can spark another rise. The tough thing is, as we've talked about all season, is there's not a whole lot. There's not a whole lot of room to grow from a 10-4 season. It's another 10-win season that feels flat. It's another 10-win season that is unsatisfying, and that's a tough place to be because you want to win, and 10 wins is enough for an Iowa program for the most part historically. That should be satisfying. But to be shut out against the 3 good teams you played all season, it's unacceptable. I mean, there's no point in beating a dead horse other than just talking about some stats and some things that have come out since the end of this game already. Just kind of incredible stats that I've compiled a bunch of, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Some other, I guess, silver linings. Torrey Taylor with the all-time season record for punting yards. That's going to be a record that will not be broken for a long time. It was a long-standing record. He broke it with his first punt of the day. And how many punts did Torrey have today? Torrey punted 7 times for 360 yards, an average of 51.4. So that's going to put that record pretty far out of reach, I think, for a while. So, hey, we have the king of all punters in Torrey Taylor. What a career he had. Great way to wrap that up. And happy for him. It was nice to see Marco Linus a little bit. It was, you know, just nice to see somebody else at quarterback. And then when Linus was out there, it was nice to see what he was able to do with his feet. Not a whole lot in the passing game. Clearly, he's not ready to go when it comes to that. A lot of the running was scrambling, running for his life with an offensive line that at that point had become a sieve. Marco Linus does end the game as Iowa's leading rusher. 6 carries, 51 yards, an 8.5-yard average, a long of 16. I think he had 2 16-yard runs. Those were Iowa's 2 longest plays of the day. Caleb Johnson with 34 yards rushing. on 7 carries. He was Iowa's second leading rusher. LeSean Williams got a lot of attempts, but wasn't able to really do anything. Terrell Washington Jr. had a nice 14-yard run early in the game before Deacon Hill threw an interception into the end zone that ended Iowa's best chance to score on the day. And, you know, the elephant in the room is Deacon Hill, and he seems like a good dude and a good leader and a nice guy. And I hope he finds whatever he's meant to do in life. That's not to be a quarterback of a Division I team, certainly not at this stage. He had another bad game, and he was 7 of 18, 56 yards, an average of 3.1 yards per completion. He threw 2 interceptions, 1 in the end zone on a really, really bad throw, a throw you just can't make on third down early in a game that's going to be, that you hope is going to be low scoring. You can't make that decision. He did through the interception. And then through the pick six late in the game that ultimately ended his day and brought Marco Linus in. Another bad throw, a bad read, just a throw you can't make in any situation, even if you're down 21-0 with no hope of coming back. And had the fumble, the strip sack at the 2-yard line, which led to another Tennessee touchdown pretty immediately. And so, you know, the thing you could always say about Spencer Petras, regardless of how bad some of his throws looked or his footwork or how many 3-and-outs in a row he would lead Iowa to, he wasn't turning the ball over very much. Deacon Hill was a turnover machine, and it wasn't just the 3 today. Again, those are some of the stats we'll look at here in just a little bit, but rough day for Deacon Hill, rough day for the Iowa offense as a whole. And just, I guess, a fitting way to go out for Brian Ferentz in what has just become, understandably, the laughingstock of college football. I mean, the announcers, they had an SEC bias for sure, and it was always going to be a little bit annoying, I think. But they were really leaning into how bad Iowa's offense is. But again, how can you blame them? Iowa's offense is that bad. Caleb Brown had 3 catches for 39 yards. Couple of big drops that didn't help, wouldn't have changed the game, but didn't help. He's got to shore that up. We saw that earlier in the season, an issue with him. It appears he's going to come back. You know, I think the deadline for the transfer portal is tomorrow, so we'll see if anybody else jumps in. Seems like Caleb Brown will be back, and he's going to have to shore that up because I was going to be relying on him. They just don't have much of a stable of wide receivers, and after the performance they've put up offensively the last couple of years, it's hard to imagine, regardless of what happens with offensive coordinator, regardless of how much Cade McNamara is able to recruit, it's hard to imagine many good athletic wide receivers coming to Iowa until they see changes on the field. And so Caleb Brown is going to be the guy, you know, starting next year, and hopefully he can shore some of those things up. Let's see, what other stats is there to look at? Not a whole lot. Iowa really made Tennessee's quarterback look good. He was 12 and 19, 151 yards, also had 27 yards rushing and 3 touchdowns on the ground, 1 touchdown through the air. That's a true freshman making his first start. Sure, he's a 5-star recruit and all of that, a big time prospect, expects to be really good for Tennessee moving forward. They're really excited to have him start this game, but Iowa really made him look really, really good. Iowa's defense, for the most part in the second half, played really well, and outside of a couple of drives, played well, but they were gassed. They weren't up to the challenge of the tempo or the running game that Tennessee put out there. The defensive line was manhandled a lot by that Tennessee offensive line. There was certainly some uncalled holds, and these officials had a rough day just in general. I mean, the fact that you don't know it's a tackle early in that game on the punt return for Tennessee, you don't blow it dead, even though it's clearly a tackle, and then it takes you several minutes to review it, it's just kind of annoying. But then Tennessee appears to have fumbled the ball in the red zone later in the half, and they don't even look at it. I mean, it doesn't even, it's like, why even, anyway. The last Tennessee touchdown felt like it was short of the end zone, and they didn't call a hold all day. So it is what it is. That's not why Iowa lost, not even close. Iowa lost because of the same reason Iowa lost all of its games this year. Its offense couldn't do anything.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Looking at some team stats, Tennessee 25 first downs, Iowa 11. Third down, Tennessee was just 3 of 12. That's really good for Iowa's defense. Iowa worse, 2 of 15. 383 total yards for Tennessee, 151 through the air, 232 on the ground, and that's where they really were able to just gash Iowa, get some big chunk plays, use that tempo, and really hurt Iowa's defense. You know, like most of the games that end up like this, the defense kind of falls apart late. The offense puts the defense in really bad positions or straight up gives Tennessee points. And so a 35-point day is not what was hung on this defense. But that being said, they didn't have their best day, weren't able to force a turnover. You know, just gave up too much. Allowed Nico Iamaliava, that's the only time I'm going to even try to say it, just allowed him too much. I want to look through just the drive chart just for the heck of it for Iowa on this day, and then get to those kind of a bunch of screenshotted stats that I grabbed from Twitter. Let's see. Iowa's first drive, 3-and-out punt, lost 3 yards. The second drive was that 10-play, 43-yard drive, got down inside the 5-yard line of Tennessee, and really felt like Iowa was going to, you know, draw first blood there. Whether or not they scored a touchdown, felt like they were going to, that, I mean, obviously that was going to be huge. It would have been the only points Iowa scored all day, but the bad interception by Deacon Hill in the end zone ended that. A 3-play, 7-yard drive ended in a punt next. Then another 3-and-out, lost 14 yards on this one. Got a first down on the next drive, 5 plays, 16 yards before they punted. 4 plays, 20 yards before they punted. And then the 1 play, 7 yards at the end of the first half. Into the second half, we have a 3-and-out, 4 yards punt, 3-and-out, 4 yards punt. Then you have the 3-play, lost 2 yards and fumbled the ball on the 2-yard line. Then you follow that up with a pick six. Then you're that's when Marco Linus came in. They had that 13-play, 53-yard drive, but ended on a turnover on downs, as did their final drive, a turnover on downs after just 4 plays. About as bad as it gets from an offense. About as bad as it gets. All right, here's some of the stats that we saw. Season stats for Deacon Hill: 2 rush touchdowns, 5 passing touchdowns, 8 interceptions, 11 fumbles, 24 sacks, a 48% completion percentage, and an average of 80 yards per game. That's rough. Now, wins per game, as Kirk Ferentz would like to point out, was better than that. And again, this isn't to pile on Deacon Hill, but 19 turnovers in less than a full season, just 7 touchdowns. It's unfathomably bad, as has Iowa's record or performance against ranked teams this season. And remember, this ranked team, now Penn State was a legitimately good team, and Michigan is legitimately one of the best teams in the country. This Tennessee team is good, and Iamaliava played well, and they've got a lot of talent and a good coach, and, you know, the sky's the limit probably for this program. But this was not the ranked team that played all season. They lost 24 players between opt-outs, transfer portals, and whatnot. since their final regular season game. So this was an all-new Tennessee team that beat Iowa. So, I mean, it's even the ranked thing, I think you take with a grain of salt. But 92-0 was the combined score of Iowa's games against three ranked teams. 92-0. Iowa didn't score a point against a ranked team this year. Oof. Iowa hadn't been shut out since the 2000 season. 23 years without being shut out. They were shut out three times this season. This is just kind of fun from the transfer portal, CFB. Point total through 14 games. Hawkeye football, 216 points through 14 games. Through 14 games, Caitlin Clark has scored 432 points. So about double. Tennessee, let's see, Iowa suffered its worst bowl loss in program history. Worse than the Rose Bowl. That's right. Score-wise, worse than the Rose Bowl. That's hard to believe. Oof. Power 5 team shut out three or more times in one season since the year 2000. You had Iowa this year, who went 10-4. The other teams, the best was Baylor in 2002, who went 3-9. You had a winless Duke team in 06, a couple of two-win Rutgers teams in 16 and 19, Washington State in 2008. This is from Matt Brown, CFB on Twitter. So again, kind of like the offensive stats, you know, Iowa, you know, teams that have averaged 16 points per game do not win games. Teams who get shut out three times in a season do not win games. Iowa somehow found a way to win 10 games this season. Most points allowed to ranked teams in a season without scoring since 2000. You had 2001 Rutgers, who in two games lost 111-0. 2005 Ball State, 94-0 in two games. And Iowa this season, 92-0 in three games. Oh, the punting thing, too. Iowa finishes the season with 1,220 more yards punting than gained on offense. More than 1,000 yards punting than offensive yards. Iowa is the only FBS team with more punt yards than offensive yards. So not only, if we had one more punting yard than offensive yard, we'd be the only team to do that. We had 1,200 more punting yards. I guess that's what happens when you have the greatest punter of all time. Oof. Iowa's scoring output over the last 10 quarters. It's a whole bunch of zeros except 1-3, and that was in the fourth quarter against Nebraska. So since halftime of the Nebraska game on Black Friday, yeah, that's right. Not even last month, as we say here on January 1st. More than a month ago, Iowa has scored 3 points. And that was that game-winning field goal against Nebraska in the fourth quarter on Black Friday. 0-3-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0 in the last 10 quarters. And David Eichholt points out, the last time Iowa scored an offensive touchdown against a ranked team was October 1st, 2022, when Luke Lachey caught a fourth quarter touchdown against Michigan. And that was in a game that was essentially a blowout already. David points out Iowa could go two calendar years without scoring an offensive touchdown against a ranked foe. Probably will. Probably will. All right, that was rough. That's enough piling on for the moment.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
All right, so what comes next? Over the next couple of weeks, Kirk Ferentz will finalize his offensive coordinator search. You know, interviews, phone calls, whatever that is. Maybe just hire the person he's already, you know, tagged for the job. And that will happen here, yes, as he said, sometime late January. So we'll be looking for that. The biggest question, as it always has been, is how much will that make a difference, regardless of who it is? I think most likely it's either Paul Chryst or Joe Philbin. I don't know which way it would go between those two. And I really don't know how I feel if I have a preference between those two. The bottom line is Kirk Ferentz is going to have to let go of this offense and let it evolve. Let Cade McNamara do what he does next season, or if it's Marco Linus, for whatever reason, let that happen. You need to find a quarterback. You need to find somebody who can coach these quarterbacks and recruit and develop these quarterbacks. But you need to find a system that allows these players to thrive. You need to find an offensive line that can protect a quarterback and open up holes for a running back. This offense is severely broken. Even in the wins, Iowa wasn't able to look good offensively. Even when they were close to full strength at the start of the season against not very good teams, Iowa was not able to look good offensively. And so, another year of Cade McNamara, I guess in the system, although the system hopefully is about to change, you get Luke Lachey back. You've got a stable of running backs back, even if, Jazz Patterson or somebody like that decides to hit the transfer portal in the next day or so. I'm not really looking at what's happening right now. So, hell, for all I know, Kirk Ferentz could have come out there and retired. I don't expect that to happen. I think if that was going to happen, he would not have been so demonstrative about, the future and staying and still having more in the tank and all of that kind of stuff that he's talked about, in the several weeks since the end of the regular season. And so you just have to hope for some level of change on this offense, because if this defense is able to come back and look good again, and we already know that Jay Higgins is coming back. Again, we talked about Luke Lachey coming back. That's fantastic. He's a huge, huge piece. You just have to have a pretty good offense. It doesn't have to be great, and it doesn't have to be air raid, but it does need to be different. It does need to change. It can't be what we've seen for 25 years under Kirk Ferentz. It just doesn't work anymore at this level. It works against your Big Ten West foes. Wisconsin looked like a pretty good team, though, in a loss to LSU today. That doesn't look like a team that's going to play Big Ten West football moving forward. And so even though you're going to have winnable games on the schedule, the question now becomes, what can you do against these elite teams? And elite is even a word I'm using too broadly there. Tennessee's not elite. I'm not sure Penn State is elite. Michigan is. But you're not just losing, you're getting blown out. You're not competing against good teams. And that's the biggest issue. So how will Iowa address that? How will they fix it? We'll see that. It's yet to be seen. Will Iowa lose anybody else in the transfer portal? I don't know. Will Iowa go out and get anybody in the transfer portal? I'm not sure about that either. I heard Brad Heinrichs from the Swarm Collective on WHO radio this morning with Ross Peterson and Travis Justice doing a little pregame for the Citrus Bowl and on the radio. And he said, they are going to try to go out and get somebody in the transfer portal, even though there aren't glaring holes and it's not going to be as splashy probably as it was last offseason when you had Cade McNamara and Eric All right away, and you ended up, Seth Anderson, and the Caleb Brown one was huge. You had a lot of that. A lot of it right now is retention. And, will some of these other guys come back? Will Sebastian Castro come back? Is there any chance in hell that Cooper DeJean comes back? I don't think so, but, crazier things have happened. It'd be interesting to follow this offseason more than just the offensive coordinator search, because I'm worried that offensive coordinator search won't result in anything drastic. I'm going to stay optimistic as I try to do, but sometimes it's hard to do that, especially after a day like this. Some big basketball this week. Tomorrow night, Iowa is at Wisconsin on the men's side. That's 21st ranked Wisconsin. That's a 6 o'clock tip. And a big, big spot for Iowa to, after having a rough week to start Big Ten play and play in the Cy-Hawk game, they at the very least have come back and taken care of business against 3 non-conference teams, looked better doing it. They look better with Owen Freeman in the starting lineup. And so this is a good Wisconsin team they have to go play, and we'll see if they're able to at least keep that competitive tomorrow evening, and then Saturday at home against Rutgers. An 11 a.m. game, that should be heavily attended, especially if I was able to kind of compete or, God forbid, pull an upset in Madison tomorrow night. And then the Iowa women, fourth ranked at home tomorrow night against Michigan State. That's an 8 o'clock tip. I think Iowa has won 10 in a row or so. Had the really nice win, really a dominant win over Minnesota last week. And then Rutgers, Iowa's at Rutgers Friday, January 5th. I believe that's the Rutgers game that sold out because Caitlin Clark's going to be there, and they're going to honor C. Vivian Stringer, which will be cool. I'll probably do some sort of post-game, post-podcast at some point tomorrow or this following week. But that's about all I have in me at the moment. I appreciate you listening. And hey, as always, go Hawks.